Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. All of the latest news from J2 is coming up in the next 30 minutes or so. I'm John Steele, hosting this week, and James Taylor is with me finally. James, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks, John. I'm still buzzing after the delicious result at the Gogo Curry Stadium last week. How are you?
Very good, thanks. I was rubbing my eyes in disbelief at that result as well. So congratulations to all involved. Great game for Victor. To be at, and I think one or two other of our pod community as well. So yeah, fantastic stuff. And James, with Canners Hour finally turning the corner, I'm going to move you off of them as quickly as possible before you get too excited. You know, management of expectations is key. So, but yeah, it looks like things are moving in the right direction for sure. But we'll keep it J2, James. I know we're on the clock this time. So first of all, I'm going to take you back, James, to last Wednesday. April the 3rd, and a full midweek round of J2 matches, round 8 of the 2024 season. It seems like a long time ago now. So to refresh your memory, we're just going to talk about two of the eyebrow-raising games from last week. We're going to have to start at Fukuda Denshi, where there was a narrow win for Jeff Chiba against Tochigi, a game that I think I predicted might be tricky for Jeff, and it was, wasn't it? They just managed to win 8-0. Against Tochigi in this game. I think, you know, we talk sometimes, James, about how the scoreline doesn't tell the whole story. Not the case here. Jeff absolutely scintillating, really, and Tochigi pitiful. I think the writing was on the wall from as early as the third minute when Hiro Komori put Jeff in front. It was 3-0 at the break after a header from Daisuke Suzuki and a tap-in from Naoki Tsubaki. I think the best goal might have been the fourth one at the start of the second half. Issei Takahashi with a kind of outside of the boot strike from the edge of the box. Then Daisuke Suzuki scored again. Dudu helped himself to a brace and nearly got sent off for over-celebrating. And I think Shuto Okaniwa rounded things off at 8-0. And there were still 15 minutes left, weren't they, when Jeff got the 8. So you kind of wondered if double figures might be on the cards. But crazy game. James, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, I think I also said last week that our Tochigi have been bloodying the noses of some more illustrious opponents, but in this one they just punched themselves in the face repeatedly. It's possibly the worst defensive display I've seen for... it's definitely the worst I've seen for a long time. It was much worse than any of Iwaki's thrashings last year against Shimizu. This was just absolutely pathetic from Tochigi. I think what epitomised it for me was the absolute failure to notice Daisuke Suzuki at two corners. That's staggering when you consider he's always the player that Jeff aimed for at corners and free kicks. This just complete dereliction of duty from everyone in Tochigi's area there. I can't understand how they just consistently failing to track back, to notice opponents, to look around, to challenge, just to mark someone. It was awful. It was awful all round. And a huge reality check for them. They were kind of, what were they, eighth or something, ninth? They were in the top half.
Yeah, they had a good start. Overall.
Seemed like they were putting together some good performances. And then this just, what a... absolutely dreadful performance from Tochigi.
I think if you asked someone to sum up kind of Tochigi like over the last 10 seasons, over a decade, one of the things I'd go to is like, pretty tight at the back and good in the air. And that just wasn't the case at all, was it? It seemed like having a midweek game just wasn't something that was on there in their programming. they weren't ready to perform on like a Wednesday night. But Tochigi were awful, so it makes it difficult to analyse Jeff, James, because they haven't had a great start this year, as we've talked about on the pod before. What did you make of them in this game? I mean, it was obviously just too easy, wasn't it? I mean, it's hard, perhaps a bit hard to judge how well Jeff played. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think my children probably could have scored at least three against Tochigi when Tochigi play like that. So, but I don't want to take anything away from Jeff. I mean, you can only play what's in front of you, and they absolutely put Tochigi to the sword, didn't they? They took their chances, many, many chances. Mm. And I think the main thing for them is that it was a confidence boost for them, because like you said, they had a bit of an iffy start to the season. They won't have an easier match than this, even in training. They won't have an easier match than this, I don't think. The intensity from the opposition in training matches is probably higher than Tochigi's was here. But yeah, it was a chance they get back to winning ways, feel good. And I think that showed because they were able to win a slightly closer game at the weekend. To be more sort of on it defensively than they were here. So yes. I think, yeah, you can't really read too much into how good Jeff were, but I think good enough.
Yeah, I think maybe I would say just comparing a team winning 8-0 to how Yokohama FC would approach a similar situation. I'm sure Yokohama FC did something similar on Wednesday night. Even if you're 3-0 up at half time, then we just go to kind of closing that game down, you know, basically declare it 3 goals. I think it was impressive that Jeff kind of went for it in the second half even, you know, whereas a lot of teams would have probably just shut up shop and said, well, let's just make sure we win this game. But yeah, he sensed maybe after having a rocky start, Jeff had a bit of frustration to kind of work out, and they had the perfect opportunity to do that. Yeah, so yeah, really, really surprising scoreline, obviously. And yeah, Tochigi, I know they ended up getting a clean sheet at the weekend in the next game, so I'm sure that the coach is highly delighted with that as the necessary response. But yeah, fantastic win for Jeff Chiba, and I'm sure Chris Hoff behind the goal was a cock-a-hoop. That one. We'll move on, James, if that's okay. We'll keep it rolling. Another game we wanted to talk about from last midweek was Nagasaki's home game against Yamagata. Another impressive win for Nagasaki. They ended up winning 2-0 in this game. And there was another match-winning performance from Matthias Jesus, who's kind of emerging as this kind of sort of player. Well, he's definitely player of the month contender, player of the season so far. Matthias Jesus opened the scoring with lovely footwork in the first half. For some reason, this goal reminded me of Philip Albert. That's a topical reference for the younger listeners. And then it was Matthias Jesus who won the ball back kind of on halfway and then sent Juanma Delgado racing clear for the second goal in the 70th minute. The only thing I noticed really about this game off the pitch, James, was that there were high winds, strong winds around the stadium before kickoff. So there were none of the usual kind of advertising boards around the pitch. I don't know if that came across on TV. I noticed it, but yeah, I think due to potential for them to you know, be dangerous and get picked up in the wind, there was less advertised than usual. But Nagasaki seemed to be clicking into gear quite nicely, don't they, James? What did you think?
Yeah, they're really good to watch at the moment, mainly because Matthias Jesus is playing so well. He's goal and assist. He's so strong on the ball, but he's got this kind of languid running style. Makes him look slower than he actually is. And yeah, he's really hard to dispossess. He's really good going forwards. As you can tell from his attacking output, he's scoring goals, he's setting people up. There was another player that stood out for me for Nagasaki as well, which was the right back, Malcolm Tsuyoshi Moyo, who he's very inexperienced, but in this game, he didn't look like it at all. He looked... he's a rookie. He made his first appearance in match day 6, I think, and then his first start was match day 7. So this was his second start. He didn't really look troubled much at all, really. Yamagata, they had a few chances but couldn't take them. But generally, yeah, I think Nagasaki were the better team and they deserved the win. And I think, yeah, Yamagata, again, had not started as badly as it did last year, but perhaps not started as well as, not as well as I expected, and perhaps, obviously not as well as they would have hoped. I don't think they would be needing to panic or anything, but they'll be looking for an upturn, I think, fairly soon.
Yeah, very funny team, Yamagata, just very inconsistent for me. Like, they can play really well and win in one game, and then the next game they just play badly, or you know, their performance levels dip and they lose. So if they can't get that, you know, at the moment they're on like win lose, if they can't kind of get a few more draws in there, a bit more consistency, I think the playoff chances might be under threat. But it is early days, and I think we're quite used to Yamagata being a kind of inconsistent team, aren't we, in previous seasons. For Nagasaki, yeah, they're looking really good. And it's interesting you pick out Malcolm Moyo. Is it Moyo Malcolm? Malcolm Moyo? Moyo is the family name, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Nagasaki, one of these teams, you know, different clubs produce different, they seem to specialise in different positions in their academy. And thinking about Nagasaki, like fullback, left back, right back seems to be a position that for some reason they do well in, you know, players like, say, Amai Kuma, for example. You know, coming through in the past, and now they've got Moyo Malcolm. So interesting to see how he's integrated into the team. Obviously, it's good to come into a team that's playing well if you're a young player or a new player.
Yeah.
But I thought they were quite impressive that they, this game was kind of in the balance until that second Juanma goal. But it always felt like Nagasaki just had a bit more, a bit more about them, and we're going to get the job done. And so it proves. Yeah, good win for them, and good Matias Jesus action as well, as ever. James, for the rest of the games from last midweek, we're going to move on to talk about the weekend games round Nana. But for the rest of the midweek action, what I'm trying to do every week is just post some kind of quick thoughts, kind of in sort of note form on our Discord, the Discord page for our J10 chat. So anybody who needs that link, wants a Discord link, we will try and remember to put it in the podcast notes for this episode, but you can find it in our Twitter bios as well. So yeah, the rest of the midweek action, you can get in kind of written note form on our Discord page. Anyway, yeah, I'm old now. Yes. On Discord. I should have just said that in the first place. Okay. So James, yeah, let's move on from the midweek action. Let's talk about the weekend. Extra time. And James, in round 9. Let's stay with Nagasaki. So all of the games were on Sunday, weren't they, to give players some time off from the Wednesday night exertions. For Nagasaki, they ended up staying second in the table after a thrilling 4-3 win at Kumamoto in a Kyushu derby. Nagasaki just rampant in the first half year. They were 3-0 up at the break. Early on, Matias Jesus hit the post with a deflected shot. And then Asahi Masayama scored twice. He headed in across from Masaru Kato. And then a beautiful finish chipping Kumamoto's keeper Ryuga Tashiro from around 12 yards. So he got to do his foot stamping routine. At the other end, Bei Jongmin hit the base of the Nagasaki post with a header for Kumamoto, but then an absolute missile of a shot from Masaru Kato from the edge of the box made it 3-0 Nagasaki. It looked like the game was done and dusted, but at the start of the second half, Kumamoto fought back, and by the 51st minute, it was 3-2. First of all, Bei Jongmin pounced on a loose ball inside the box and pulled one back. And then Nagasaki defender Shunya Yoneda, who's been impressive this season, he deflected across from Shun Ito into his own net. So suddenly it was game on. Nagasaki began to look a bit nervous, but with about 20 minutes to go, it was 4-2. And who else? Matias Jesus tapping in after the ball dropped perfectly for him at a corner. That made it 4-2. There was still time just at the end for Kumamoto to score again and make it 4-3. And it was again 16-year-old Keito Kumashiro. He fired in from about 14 yards when Nagasaki failed to clear. On Kumashiro, 4 goals in 3 games for him. But this was the first time he'd scored a goal in open play. All his other ones have been penalties. So, making me question my output, this young guy at the age of 40. So, James, a thrilling win. I think Nagasaki made it a bit more interesting than it probably should have been in that second half. But what do you think of this one? Kumamoto 3, Nagasaki 4.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I put in my first point on my notes, is I'm not sure Nagasaki should have let Kumamoto back into this one. I mean, 3-0 up at half-time and playing as well as they were. But Kumamoto do deserve credit for getting back to 3-2 just 6 minutes into the second half. So clearly the manager had words with them at the break, and it worked for the most part. It was good to see Bei Jongmin score his first goal, because he's had quite a few near misses. I haven't seen that much of Kumamoto in full matches yet this year, but in highlights, quite often he shows up and he's had a good chance, but he's just missed, or he's hit the post or something. So that'll boost his confidence, and that'll be good for Kumamoto if he can continue scoring. So he looks like quite a decent striker. But to be a good striker, you have to actually score. And also on Kumamoto, yeah, Ryuga Tashiro seems to veer, as usual, between outstanding save and soft goal. Like the third goal, it was a really good strike, but Tashiro didn't like stick his arm up. He just sort of watched it go past him. And I don't really know why. I think, he has his moments, doesn't he? And sometimes it seems a bit performative.
Well, I sometimes worry about, you know, when goalkeepers and defenders celebrate like a save or a tackle. Mm. I sort of like seeing that in isolation, but it's a bit worrying if, like, is it you weren't expecting to save that, or you don't normally make tackles? It's you know, it's not your birthday kind of thing, you know. So surely saving things and tackling is what they're in the team to do. But yes, I concur, James. I think you're probably right.
Mm. Yeah. But he's entertaining to watch, so I don't want to slag him off too much. He's still quite young. Mm. Perhaps he'll, his style will change as he gets more experience. But also, speaking of experience, Keita Kamashiro, 4 goals in 3 games, 3 late penalties to win against Jeff and Yamaguchi. That's pretty good for, a child, basically. The goal here was a really good strike. It's got so much confidence for a young player. Mm. It's really good to see, but also depressing. Mm. And it's another good young player, Kumamoto. And I did have a laugh on Twitter when Martin Spivey tweeted about it and then asked, where's he going to be playing next year? Erin replied, oh, don't worry, I'm sure we've got him on a 1-year rolling contract. Mm. We'll revisit it in November. No need to panic.
That's right. Just keep paying him in Roblox points and the Fortnite bucks rather than actual money. That should keep him happy, you think?
Yeah. And the main man, though, again, was Matthias Jesus. He's outstanding. I can't wait to hear the next episode of the PVcast, actually, with Daniel and Chikashi, because Nagasaki are so good to watch at the moment. It must be so much fun mainly watching Matthias Jesus just control every game. They've only lost once this year. They're only a point behind Shimizu. Mm. They are what we have been wanting to see from them for the last few years, really, aren't they now?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it turns out Fabio Carrile leaving them in the lurch turned out to be a good, serendipitous, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, and also this brings us back to your point about Shimo Taylor at the beginning of last year, wondering how good he is. Because now you wonder, well, like, the players like Matthias Jesus is clearly too good for at the moment, too good for J2. So does that mean, are they playing like this because of Shimo Taylor, or are they playing really well because they're just really good and making Shimo Taylor look good? But then you've got, well, Carrile couldn't do it, so maybe it is Shimo Taylor. Who knows? It's interesting. It's a mystery.
I think my issue with Nagasaki, and it's a minor one, at the moment, I think they are looking like the most impressive team so far. Like, if we just you mentioned Shimizu, they're top, 1 point clear, but Nagasaki in second, we've got Okayama in third, and Yokohama FC in fourth. Nagasaki definitely been the most impressive side, I think, out of those four so far. But they do just tend to, like I mentioned, they make games a bit too interesting, and they concede a bit too much territory and a few too many goals. So I think Nagasaki at the moment look like a pretty good shout for a top two finish, nine games in. But my question mark would just be, like, that game, the Kumamoto game, that should have been like 4-0 or 5-1. They should have come out and scored once or twice more early on in the second half and killed that game. Instead, it became a very interesting kind of like helter-skelter. And there is probably an alternative unit where Kumamoto could have got a point out of that. So if you're the coach, obviously you'd be delighted to have an away win and score 4 goals. But I would also be saying, like, lads, we could have done that. We could have just seen out that game a little bit more comfortably. Mm. And maybe the Yamagata game in Minoru, because I know they won 2-0 and that's good. But it was in the balance until quite late on.
Yeah.
When they got that second goal. So I think Nagasaki, they just create loads of chances. But it's dangerous to be in a situation where you can score like 3 goals in an away game wouldn't have won them this match, right? So that you having to score 4 goals to win a game is always you're asking a lot from the players, I think. So we'll see, but at the moment I haven't seen a team more impressive or more entertaining than Nagasaki, and as long as Matthias Jesus stays fit and stays healthy, then I think they've got potential I mean, obviously he's not a striker. He's not Koki Ogawa, but he has the potential to have that kind of impact on a team. You know, yeah. Take a team from like fifth, sixth, seventh up to first or second. So we'll watch them with interest. On Kumamoto, I think they're again entertaining to watch. Not always, you know, for the right reasons, maybe from a Kumamoto point of view. But yeah, Keito Kumashi, are we sort of avoiding talking about him because it makes us feel old and sad, James? But yeah, 16 years old and 4 goals in 3 games. The way that he's been used is very intelligent. I think bringing him off the bench.
Yeah,
you know, rather than just throwing him in at the deep end early on. So, yeah, a bit of it reminded me of the impact that Keisuke Goto had for Iwata, you know, a year or so ago. So, yeah, we'll have to watch his progress with interest. James, we'll move on and talk about one more game from round 9 from Sunday. Let's talk about Okayama because they're in third place. They're level on points with Nagasaki. They were involved in an exciting 2-2 draw at Ehime on Sunday. And I think the tone in this game was set straight from the kickoff in the first half when Riki Matsuda went for goal from the kickoff for Ehime. He was off target, but he did score in the 12th minute to put Ehime in front. A lovely curling strike from the edge of the box. Midway through the second half, Okayama were level thanks to an own goal when Haruka Motoyama put the ball across the goal and it went in off Ehime's Reya Morishita. 2 minutes after that, though, Ehime went in front again. Lovely diving header from a free kick from Sora Ogawa. But after that, Ehime were up against it. Back, Kyonwoo was shown, in my opinion, a very harsh straight red card for what looked like a kind of yellow card tackle on the halfway line. So Ehime are down to 10 men, and they managed to hold out until stoppage time. But in the 92nd minute, Keita Saito rescued a point for Okayama with a towering header after Ehime didn't really react quickly enough to a short corner routine. So Ehime 2, Okayama 2 at full time. Fairly pulsating J2 game this, James. What did you think?
Yeah, particularly the last 20 minutes or so after the red, that was it was almost one-way traffic, but it was exciting stuff. I think for Ehime, there were 3 players that really stood out for me. It was Ishiura, Kubota, and Matsuda. Mm. And the thing about Matsuda, he was, like you say, he was very involved straight from the kickoff. But what was interesting, I think, was the way he was involved almost constantly throughout the game, and which you don't always get from strikers. You get some who kind of just, they're on the periphery waiting for the ball to come to them, and they don't really have much impact on the game. But Matsuda was all over the place looking to get involved, which I think is a testament to him and his attitude and his style, but also to the tactics and to the other players doing their jobs to bring him into the game. And his goal was very well taken. I think Okayama, it's been a bit of a bad week for them, a loss and a draw, and they really need to work on their defending from set pieces, because that's 4 goals conceded in 2 games from free kicks and corners. Mm. And so they're, a couple of weeks ago, we were looking at them thinking, well, their defense is impenetrable. And now it seems like there's a way through, which is to get a set piece somewhere near their area. I thought the red was a fair red,
oh,
actually.
Okay. Fair, yeah. Okay.
I thought it was reckless and a bit dangerous. What gets me though, recently, I don't know how long this has been happening, but players who get red cards don't get off the pitch. Mm. They stand there for ages.
Yeah, it was funny watching the Okayama player was trying to push him off.
It's the same. It always happens now. I think it's like player, you get a red card, but they won't go, as if the ref's gonna change his mind.
Well, yeah, I think in some cases the idea is to slow things down so that a substitute can be prepared. For example, if the goalkeeper's sent off, you know, you're going to be wanting to bring on a reserve goalkeeper. I think, Kyomi looked very surprised to be sent off. Perhaps that's influencing my opinion, you know, to some extent. Yeah, it wasn't a good tackle. I wouldn't have been surprised at all to see the yellow card come out.
Yeah.
But in a game that hadn't been, from what I could see, hadn't been sort of dirty.
No.
It seemed a bit of a strange one like, I just think, you know, referees, they only get one look at these things. And, you know, one thing that's often said, well, they need to be sure, you know, if they're giving a penalty, they need to be sure. And, I'm just seeing that. Sorry, give a red card. You need to be sure. And I was like, I've seen that tackle just once. Can you be sure that's a red card tackle? So yellow would have been if I'm the referee, I thought yellow might have been a safer bet. But that's why I'm not a ref, I suppose. But on Okayama, I wonder if it could be something as simple as one of the Yanagis was suspended, weren't they? Which one was it? Not Yasutaka.
Not Yasutaka. The other
Yanagi. And I wonder if it's something as simple as, you know, a very, very well drilled back line just had, you know, one of the key players taken out.
Mm.
And that's just messed up. I mean, you mentioned that they let in 3 goals in midweek against Yokohama FC. They were all the same goal. They were just two free kicks from the same position, then a corner and 3 headers.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as if they weren't, you know, they didn't have fair warning that might happen. So, yeah, it's interesting to see that they've gone from having the best defence to, well, probably over the last 2 rounds in the form table, maybe the one, except for Tochigi, probably the worst defence. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they recover, because they were travelling really smoothly, weren't they, up right up at the top table, and now they haven't won in 3. So we'll see. Ehime, just so much fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think someone might say, John, you just criticised Nagasaki for making games very open, and now you're sort of praising Ehime for doing the same thing. And I think it's because Ehime just been promoted, and you know they're just looking to, they could be very dull and negative and just try and grind out results.
Mm.
But they're just playing. Everybody seems to be having fun in that team. The players seem to be enjoying it, and I found that quite infectious. And I ended up sort of wishing them well whenever I watched them for that reason. You know, loads of fantastic goals. I would say the atmosphere seems to be good. I'm more critical of Nagasaki because the expectation is higher. With the quality of squad that they have, I expect them to score 3 goals and then close out the game quite comfortably. But with Ehime, it's like they could score 3 and concede 3. You know,
yeah.
And usually in the last 20 minutes, right? That's when everything kicks off with Ehime.
This one, after the red card, it was basically one-way traffic. So Okoyama had so many corners and constant pressure. They were just hanging around on the edge of Ehime's area, giving the ball to Gabriel Xavier and trying to get him to get it to Lukao or someone like that. And it was, Ehime did really well to hold out as long as they did.
Mm.
And of course, it feels like it's a sucker punch when you concede in stoppage time after almost holding out to the end. But to be honest, the way Okoyama were pressuring them wouldn't have been a surprise if Okoyama had gone on to win. I think the fact that they weren't able to score the second quickly enough meant that they didn't have time. You know, he didn't have time to get a third. But then that's because Ehime defended really, really well. They're packing their own box and people throw in their bodies in front of shots and crosses and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so, yeah, it was really entertaining.
Yeah, in some ways it might end up going down as a point gained rather than 2 lost when you consider they were playing with a, you know, one player fewer. But yeah, it's funny. I wouldn't have thought Ehime would be in the sort of top 3 sort of sexiest teams after 9 rounds. But it does go to show, I think we'll add in just rolling Yamaguchi as well. You don't need a massive budget and resources to produce entertaining attacking football. You know, with the handbrake off, you just need a coach who can kind of get that out of the players that they have. So yeah, Ehime and to some extent as well, Yamaguchi, been a kind of breath of fresh air, haven't they, this season?
Mm-hmm.
So okay, James, real quick, we're just going to mention, at the request of listener Martin Spivey, Akita, they're up in 6th after winning 3-1 away at Oita at the weekend. Crazy start for this game that had me checking. I was watching the right highlights, because Akita were 2-0 up inside 13 minutes, goals from Daiki Sato, and then Akita hit the crossbar with a header from Yukito Kajiya. And then probably the craziest penalty, well, I shouldn't say the craziest penalty we'll see all season, but the one going to be it's going to be up there. Kajiya took a shot that hit Masaki Yumiba, Oita midfielder, in the face, but the referee gave a penalty for handball and gave Yumiba a yellow card as well into the bargain. So you can imagine, Yumiba was just too stunned to even argue. He was like, fine, it's going to be one of those days, I guess. You know, you probably get out of the stadium to find out that like a bird's pooed on your car as well, you know, that kind of thing. So the penalty was scored. And then Akita had Shion Niwa, James, our beloved Shion, sent off for managing to pick up 2 yellow cards. No complaints from anybody about that. He was very silly. And then Oita pulled a goal back through Arata Watanabe before half time. In the second half, Oita created and missed chance after chance with their extra player. And on the break at the end, Akita managed to hit the crossbar twice. And then injury time, Shota Aoki headed in a 3rd goal to give Akita an impressive win and put them in 6. I will just add on that goal, what on earth the Oita goalkeeper was doing, I have no idea. He just looked like he was scared that he might get hurt, and just decided to let Aoki have it. And I think really, you know, okay, Shotaoki's a big guy, but you can use your hands. The goalkeeper can use their hands. The worst case is you're going to punch him in the face. So I just couldn't understand what the goalkeeper. And I know Taro Hamada has been impressive in a few games this year, including saving a penalty against Yokohama City, of course. But I just thought on this goal, it's like, what are you? Shotaoki just got that goal by sheer desire. Basically, he just really wanted to head that ball, and the goalkeeper wasn't as keen. So crazy win for Akita, and we haven't talked about them much. We'll probably have a chance maybe in future pods. But yeah, in sixth place and a freewheeling 3-1 away win. Is impressive stuff. So yeah, well done to all involved. And James, we know your views on Oita. I share them. So we're still waiting to see.
Still don't know what's going on. What's happened to Konosuke Nishikawa?
It's a good question.
But I just want to say about Akita. First of all, that penalty decision is so ridiculous. It's laughable. It's not worth getting angry about. It's just so funny. And also, I think if there was ever a team that you would put money on to be able to defend a lead with just 10 men, it's got to be Akita, hasn't it?
I'm surprised they sometimes just don't start with 10 players for fun, just to see how long they can hold out. Yeah. But by the way, let's assume that ball had hit Masaki Yumiba's arm, right? He's 2 or 3 yards away. The ball is fired at him.
Put the lid back on that can of worms, please.
But a yellow card? A yellow card for that? Like, it's like, you've got arms, here's a card. Anyway, yes. Right, Jim. Point taken. But again, on the rest of the round 9 games from the weekend, I will post a few quick notes on those on the Discord at some point in the next few days. So games that we haven't talked about on the pod for reasons of time and brevity, please, if your team wasn't mentioned or there's a game you wanted to hear my thoughts about, then you can find it on the Discord. Haven't really sold it very well there, James. Got to work on the pitch, I think. But the rest of the games will be rounded up on Discord. Extra time. All right, James, I think that's pretty much all for us for this week. But before I let you get back to your important duties, there's a small matter of the most Bravo player of the week for us to concentrate on. I have a couple of names, one which I prepared earlier and two which have come to mind as we've been talking. But you have a long, long list this week. So any honourable mentions?
Quite a few, yeah. So for match day 8, I've got an honourable mention for, I think, Akito Fukumori of Yokohama FC. For the three assists, the two free kicks and the corner were all his, I think, that led to the goals. And also match day 8, Jose Aurelio Suarez of Tokushima. He made a lot of good saves in that 1-1 draw against Shimizu. And we mentioned earlier Moyo of Nagasaki. He played really well in only his second career start. And then match day 9, I got Kazuki Fujita of Jeff. I thought he played really well against Kagoshima. He was much more assured than before he left for under-23 national duty. I thought he was a bit dodgy earlier in the year, but he played it much, much more calmly and confidently, I think, in that game. And also with Jeff, Naoki Tsubaki scored in both of their games. We didn't really see much. He played last year, but didn't really feature much on the score sheet. And so it's good to see he's getting some goals now, finally having a bit of impact. Kind of quiet last year. Shuichi Gonda, two really good performances from him at Shimizu in the draw with Tokushima and the 1-0 win against Kofu. Also managed to spot Fabian Gonzalez sort of ducking down and hiding behind him.
That's a great gif.
Yeah. Which he wouldn't have done if his defender hadn't said something like look behind you. That was really funny. Yeah.
Gonzalez was looking at him the way I look at like a cheeseburger.
Yeah. And but there's two players are really hard to choose between. Who performed well on both match days. We've talked about them both, Keita Kumashiro of Kumamoto and Matthias Jesus of Nagasaki, but I think I've got to give it to Matthias just because For some reason, we haven't picked him yet this season, and it pretty much he should be the first name on this list every week, I think. Mm. So I'm giving it to Matthias Jesus. Mm. What about you?
Well, I thought we had given it to Matthias Jesus. So obviously, I'm in need of a lie down or some brain mind bleach or something to clear things up. But yeah, he would have been. He's one of my honourable mentions because I think he's just been imperious, really, pretty much since the season started. So yeah, he's definitely been the catalyst for good results for, you know, two Nagasaki wins in the space of 5 days. So yeah, I think he's a good shout. Keito Kumashiro, I think cumulatively over the past month, you know, 4 games, you know, he scored in each one, he's 16. That kind of puts him into the honourable mentions category as well. I think he'd be a worthy contender. But yeah, I agree with Matthias Jesus. The only other player who's on my list was, as you've already mentioned, Kazuki Fujita, because he presided over 2 clean sheets for Jeff, and he got a lovely reception from the Tochigi supporters, you know, where he played alone after the game, which I think that also reflects quite well on the Tochigi supporters after enduring an 8-0 drubbing. And then he also saved a penalty, didn't he, in the game against Tokushima at the weekend, and that was from Thiago Alves, and it wasn't the best penalty you'll ever see, but Thiago Alves is pretty good, you know, it must be quite scary to be facing a penalty from him. So I thought 2 clean sheets and a penalty save means that Kazuki Fujita is my pick, but I'm not going to disagree with Matthias Jesus, and I don't think I'd disagree with Keito Kumashiro either. So yeah, pretty good. Actually, there were some really, really good individual performances over the 2 rounds, I think, that we talked about. Yeah. So difficult to pick. But yeah, Matthias Jesus, he's capping off a good week with the highest accolade of most Bravo player on the J Talk pod. So yeah, fair play. James, before we disappear, we should look at the round 10 games coming up this weekend. There are a couple of exciting looking ones, in my opinion. So for round 10, we have a pretty even split of games on Saturday and Sunday, April 13th and 14th. 6 games on Saturday, with 4 of those coming at 2 p.m. We have Sendai against Yamagata, the Michinoku Derby. It looks like the stadium's going to be close to be sold out for that one. Another derby comes at Kei's Denki Stadium, at Mito against Tochigi in the Kitakanto Derby. We also have Jeff Chiba hosting Oita, and at Nagasaki hosting Tokushima, who must be a bit worried about having to contain Matthias Jesus for 90 minutes. At 4 p.m. There's a pair of games. Iwaki hosting Shimizu. Again, stadium looks set to be sold out for that one at the Hawaiians Stadium, I think it's called now, in Iwaki. And at Ehime host Kagoshima, the battle of the two promoted teams, if I remember rightly, at 4 p.m. And then 4 games on Sunday, April the 14th, all at 2 p.m. Akita against Okayama, Yokohama FC hosting Fujieda, Yamaguchi against Gunma, and Kumamoto hosting Kofu. James, any games you've got your eye on for the weekend?
Yo, Sendai Yamagata, I think that's going to be interesting, because both teams are a little bit out of form. I suppose Sendai only 1 win in their last 5, Yamagata 2 wins in their last 5. It's going to be a sellout, or very, very close to it. There might be 1 or 2 empty seats, but that's going to be interesting. Iwaki Shimizu also is going to be a sellout, and Iwaki, I think, will be very eager not to repeat their results against Shimizu from last year. So that's an extra bit of motivation for them. And Mito against Tochigi. Yeah, Tochigi, after that awful showing against Jeff, they kind of sorted their defense out a bit at the weekend. And Mito have only scored 4 goals all season. So I don't expect much from their attack in this game or in any game, really. And they've drawn their last 4. Still only got 1 win. And then on Sunday, Kumamoto Kofu, interesting. Kumamoto don't seem to have any problems scoring, but they do seem to have problems defending. Kofu are really inconsistent, but still somehow 5th. The magic of Kofu.
Yeah, it's the law, I think. J-League rule, yeah. Subsection 5. Kofu must be 5th or 6th. Yeah.
And Akita Okayama. So we know Akita, they'll be very happy after their win the other day under difficult circumstances. We also know that they are very good at scoring from set pieces up against Okayama, who we now know are not very good at defending set pieces. Mm. So that adds an interesting dimension to that game, I think.
I feel like, don't Okayama have a sort of gaggle of ex-Akita players as well? Like Keita Saito for one. There's another, I'm sure there's at least one more that I'm blanking on. But
I can't remember.
It could be a reunion, reunion or two in that game. Yeah, should be very interesting. I think I agree. Obviously, from a kind of a blockbusting point of view, I think Sendai Yamagata, you know, full stadium, beautiful stadium. Obviously, that's kind of the box office pick, isn't it? I think that'll be a big game. Mito, I think, are in a spot of bother, aren't they? With only 4 goals scored and 1 win in 9, so they'll be desperate to get something going against Tochigi. I do fear for Tokushima away at Nagasaki. Although we're talking, this is the J League we're talking about, so it is the kind of game where, you know, it's going to be 0-0 and Daiki Watari is going to pop up and bundle in a Tokushima winner in second half stoppage time. But yeah, I think Tokushima supporters probably best to travel to Nagasaki more in hope than expectation. You feel
or stay home.
Or stay home. Yeah, that's another possibility. Yamaguchi Gunma interesting, because Gunma also not quite. Well, they're not scaling the heights of last season by any stretch of the imagination, are they? They're struggling. And I suppose on paper, before the season, that would be an away game that they would target as a chance to get points. But Yamaguchi have been perhaps better than expected. I'm interested to see how that one plays out. And Yokohama FC against Fujieda. To be honest, I was just looking at Yokohama FC's home record after 5 games. We've only won 2 of the home games we've had so far. Because Shuhei Yamada is a bit of a cautious multi-handbrake operator. So hopefully Yokohama FC can get a win against Fujieda, another team who look in like they might be in relegation trouble this year. But Yokohama FC don't tend to power past teams 8-0 in a Jeff Chiba style. So we'll see how that goes. That one will probably stay 0-0 for a while, I think. But, All right, James, thanks so much for coming on and reviewing and previewing with me as always. I know we had a few scheduling issues this week. I mean, we kind of shot Mike's JTET short corner out of the escape hatch, put it out into the wild early so that people could listen to that before the midweek J3 games this week. But yeah, we'll put this out as soon as we can, and hope listeners enjoyed, and hopefully we'll be back again next week, and we can see how wrong we were about round 10. In J2. But thanks for coming on, James. It's appreciated. And thanks to all our listeners, people who support us on Patreon and support the big pod as well. Of course, it's much, much appreciated, and not something we take for granted. So thanks very much for that. And enjoy your football this weekend, J2 and J3. And we'll be back soon. See you then. Bye for now.